This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're continuing our NHL preview. We're now focusing on the Metropolitan Division, and we will start with the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, year in, year out, they're the one of the best regular season teams, but their playoff demons just seem to rear their ugly head. If you're a Penguins fan, can you trust Marc-Andre Fleury?
Yeah, probably not right now, Drew. I mean, but he has done it before, so he is capable of doing that. The big key here is lose Doug Murray, but get Rob Scuderi. Rob Scuderi is a better player, I think, moves the puck better. Doesn't a great skater, but better than Murray, because Murray really is slow. Their defense is a question mark. Long term, it's not, because they have a lot of talent in the system. But short term, it is. And I like Pittsburgh, but I don't love Pittsburgh this year.
I do. And I don't think there should be any concerns with Marc-Andre Fleury. And you're going to say, why? He was terrible in the playoffs. Yes, he was terrible. But I do think that he has the inner motivation this year to be better. He's had two straight poor seasons in a row now. And I think he's upset that he wasn't one of the goalies picked for Team Canada, because a couple of years ago, most people would have had him on there. So I do think Pittsburgh is still just as strong. And, you know, you mentioned the Scuderi, and they brought in D'Agostini, who didn't work out with New Jersey. I still think Pittsburgh is going to be one of the top offensive teams. When you have Malkin and Crosby down the middle and they're healthy, I still think they're just, still that dynamic that they're going to lead this team. So I still think this is a top team in the Metropolitan Division.
The Washington Capitals added Mikhail Grabowski. He was their biggest signing this offseason. They lost Mike Ribeiro. He was their biggest deletion from this roster. Is this Caps team just the same as last year's?
Yeah, basically, I think Grabowski is probably a little bit of a downgrade over Ribeiro. I think Ribeiro's power play effect is going to be felt. I don't think they're going to be as good in the power play last year.
Power play in the league last year, Richie.
Yeah, last year first. I don't think they'll be as good this year, because they had two options on the half boards last year, and Grabowski doesn't fill that role as well as Ribeiro does. I look at their defense, and I don't love it. Erskine, Hillen, Oleski, Orlov. I just don't love. I mean, even Green is not a great defender. I like Carlson a lot. I like Olsner a lot. There's nothing here to inspire any more confidence than you'd have before about this squad. And George McPhee, I heard he quoted recently, just get into the playoffs and get a chance. Well, every time you get in the playoffs, your team never has a chance, because the way it's built, it just doesn't do it for me, and I just don't think this team is anything special.
I think the Johansson, Backstrom, Ovechkin line is one of the top lines in hockey, and they're still going to have a good power play, probably not number one, because Ribeiro was so effective on that power play. I actually have the Capitals missing the playoffs and finishing fifth in the division, because I think that they have taken a step back, and for them to be as good as they were last year, if not better, I think it's going to have to depend on their goaltending tandem. And Neuwirth and Holtby are really good.
Yeah, they're good.
But I don't know if they can repeat that, because they were making up from a lot of defensive deficiencies last year. I like Olsner, like John Carlson, but as Richie mentioned, when you get down to the bottom, Jack Hill and Oleski, Strachan, Orlov, I mean, it's a group that leaves a lot to be desired.
The New York Rangers added a few bodies. They lost a few bodies. No one of any significance, yep, really. But is the biggest addition in New York the one, sort of an addition by subtraction, getting rid of John Tortorella, bringing in Alain Vigneault?
I do think so, Drew. I think Vigneault's a good coach. I think he's not as hard on his players as Tortorella, but that doesn't mean he's not hard on his players. There's talent here. Some of it overrated. Some of it underrated. I think their defense, 1-4, is as good as you're going to get if Staal is healthy. Girardi, McDonough, Delzato, Staal is a very good top four. Arguably in the top five in the NHL in terms of talent, mix of speed, skill, physicality. Lundqvist is amazing. Coming into a contract year. On offense, they have pieces, and they need guys with more confidence. I like the Rangers this year. I'm not saying I love them, but I like them, and I think no Tortorella helps the squad.
Absolutely. They're going to be less defensive, and Alain Vigneault is going to stress offense, and he's going to bring... Not just stressing offense, but he's going to try to make this team a little bit more well-rounded. And Rick Nash played well last year, but he's still got to be almost better than he was last year. And he was almost a point per game player last year.
But I agree with you. Up the middle.
They're one of the strongest teams with Stepan and Richards and Broussard. I think it's clear now that Stepan is the number one center. Richards is no longer the number one center.
Sather did a nice job in that negotiation, by the way.
Absolutely. And I think that the New York Rangers are still a playoff team. I don't have them as a contender, but I do think that they're going to squeak in and get one of the wild card spots.
The New York Islanders made the playoffs last year for the first time in a number of years. Are they poised to build on last year's playoff berth, and what impact will key addition Cal Clutterbuck have on the team?
See, Cal Clutterbuck
was
brought in.
I know he's
in,
hurt, but he's going to be, I mean, he'll be back.
Yeah, he will be back. He's going to be out for a little bit. But Clutterbuck has been up at the top of the list for hitters. He can even fight, but he was one of the most physical players for the Minnesota Wild, who's traded for Nino Niederreiter. But, you know, this team is not that different. They lost Streit. They've added Pierre-Marc Bouchard, but really that line with Tavares, Molson, whether it's Okposo that they bring up to the top line or Josh Bailey, I think they're still going to be a force to be reckoned with. I don't know if they've improved enough to get out of the first round. I do have them making the playoffs, but there's still some concerns for me with goaltending. Nabokov isn't getting any younger, but I still think they're a playoff team.
Love their speed. You try and keep up with this team skating-wise, and it's hard. It's really hard. I like Clutterbuck when he comes back. He's also really good friends with Tavares, which is a big factor there. I have concerns about their bottom of their defense and their goaltending. I don't like Nabokov that much. I have concerns that he can be up to the task all year. Their last pairings there, I mean, what's Hickey going to do and straight? And so some concerns there. But offensively and skating-wise and youth, and these contracts that Snows has are great. So I think the Islanders are a playoff team this year, and I think if they can make some moves, they can maybe make a little bit more noise.
The Columbus Blue Jackets bring in Nathan Horton, ex of the Boston Bruins, and they bring in Jack Skilly, ex of the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. You know, Sergei Bobrovsky, was last year real or was last year Steve Mason?
I think it was real, but I don't think that he's going to be able to replicate that in the sense that it made up for tons of defensive deficiencies, even though the group isn't that bad. I mean, Jack Johnson is a fantastic defenseman. He's emerged as their top defenseman, and Prout was a guy that emerged, and Fedor Tuten had one of his best offensive years in a long time. And then you've got Ryan Murray coming in as a rookie. But to me, there's too many question marks there on defense, and they're one of the worst offensive teams in the NHL. They don't score enough goals. And, you know, Gabrick didn't have a good year last year. He's going to be on the top line there with Anisimov and Dubinsky. I don't think they're going to score enough goals in this division to make the playoffs.
Horton out to December hurts them. Their offense, I like some of their guys, but Ryan Johansson, is he ever going to take the next step? And the knock on him is he's lazy. Dalton Pruitt's a guy I like on defense, and Ryan Murray is a good guy. Long term, this organization's going the right way. I just don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year.
The Philadelphia Flyers brought in Mark Streit. They brought in Vincent LeCavalier. They lost Danny Briere. They lost Ilya Brizgalov. They lost some other depth players. But, you know, obviously it's one of the more enviable offenses in the entire NHL. But have they done enough to shore up the defense and the goaltending to put them back into the playoffs?
I think so. I agree with what Kevin Allen said when we had him on in the first hour. The reason why the Flyers are going to be better this year is because they're going to be healthy. Hartnell's going to be back on the top line with Giroux and Voracek, if he's healthy, but he is healthy right now. And I like LeCavalier playing on line with possibly Braden Schenn and Wayne Simmonds there. It could be Matt Reed, but he'll be most likely the second-line center with Couturier as the third-line center. They're very strong up the middle. And I think Mark Streit's going to make them better. As Kevin Allen mentioned, they're going to be more of a puck possession team. Coburn had health problems last year. He didn't have the best year. But Luke Schenn was healthy last year. I thought he had a very underrated season. I think Ray Emery is going to be the number one goalie for this team, and I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And I do think Philly will be in the playoffs this year.
I think too much talent, Drew, based on last year's also poor performance. Too much talent this year up the middle. Giroux, LeCavalier, Couturier is going to have a better year, I think. Sign Reed to the contract. Voracek's going to play in that first game. They have Schenn. I mean, too much offensive talent. Their defense isn't, I don't think, cup-worthy, but I think it's playoff-worthy. And I think they'll get enough goaltending out of those two guys, more so Emery than Mason, I think, to at least make the playoffs. Although I think Laviolette, if they start off poorly, could be on the chopping block.
Worked for Chicago last year, Richie. They split Emery and Crawford, and then when they got to the playoffs, they chose Crawford.
The New Jersey Devils lost Ilya Kovalchuk to that surprise retirement, call it what you want. They lost David Clarkson in free agency, yet they bring in Corey Schneider from Vancouver. They bring in Ryan Klough, Michael Ryder, Jaromir Jagr, Damian Brunner. You know, have the Devils done enough to put themselves back into the conversation as a playoff team in the Metropolitan Division and or maybe as a wild card team?
Quite frankly, no. And I like how Lou Lamoriello has addressed the goaltending situation, because Martin Brodeur will play his last year this year or next year. And, you know, he'll tell you that, you know, he would love to play another 3 years. But, I mean, there's only so many years you can play once you're get into your 40s. Drew, you'd know that. You turned 40 30 years ago. So I think that the Devils, no, will not be better next year. They didn't score enough goals last year, and that was with Kovalchuk. So this year, yeah, they're going to try to put, you know, move Ryder and Bruner and Eliosh and Zubris and Klo around, you know, the wings. Or, you know, Zajac and Henrique are two really good centers, but, you know, I think that they're going to also struggle to score goals. And then on defense, after Bryce Salvador and Andy Green, I don't like their defense.
Yeah,
I mean, Salvador is solid as a defensive defenseman, the captain. But then Volchenkov is, you know, his best days are behind him. Adam Larson is still too young to be counted on in the top four. He'll most likely be a bottom pairing guy. He'll be better, you know, a couple of years from now. But there's way too many question marks for them to be a playoff team.
He's not good enough. Schneider's going to help in goal for sure, and they're going to be competitive, but I don't think they're going to be a playoff team.
I hate to say it, Drew, because you know I'm a big Devils guy, but it's not going to happen this year.
Final team in the Metropolitan Division before we get to our predictions, the Carolina Hurricanes. Just too many holes on this roster?
Yeah, they have a top line, and they have, I think, a good goaltender and some young defenders who are going to be good in the future, but this is not a team that's going to be competitive this year.
Yeah, and it's going to be extremely difficult. You know, we've talked about the Penguins, the Flyers, the Rangers, the Islanders, the Capitals. I mean, these are teams in this division that they're going to play night in and night out. And, you know, you lose Pitkinen, so you bring in Hainsey, but you really lack, you know, a top pair. Justin Falk, I think, is going to have a good year. But, you know, you've got a really good line. Stahl, Tolusti, and Semin emerged as one of the top lines last year in the second half of the season. But, you know, after that, you've got question marks on offense. So I don't think they're going to be a playoff team this year.
Give me three playoff teams from the Atlantic Division to start.
I actually have just regular season.
Just the
here.
Three to start, yeah, because the top three from each division, then we'll do the wild cards.
Philly, one.
Atlantic Division.
Sorry.
Even though it doesn't
make any... it's a former Atlantic Division, so I'm already confused by it. Detroit, one in regular season. Boston, two. Toronto, three. Ottawa, four. Sorry, you won three. Ottawa's going to be four. I don't think there's going to be a crossover.
Ezzy?
My top
three. Detroit, Boston, and give me your third one again.
Toronto.
Toronto. And you have Atlanta and Ottawa as well?
Four, yeah.
Okay. Ezzy?
My top three are Boston, Ottawa, Montreal.
Ottawa and Montreal. Okay. And then give me three playoff teams from the Metropolitan Division. Obviously, you're going to have four there. You don't think there's a crossover.
Yeah, I don't think there's a crossover. Philly, one. Pittsburgh, two. Islanders, three. And Rangers, four.
Ezzy, you seem to indicate that you're going to have five teams coming out of the Metropolitan Division.
Well, I have Pittsburgh, one. Philly, two. Rangers, three. My two wildcard teams are the Islanders and the Red Wings.
So you have the Red Wings out of the Atlantic Division.
Yep.
Okay. Well, there you have their playoff predictions. We'll tweet those out so we'll have them on the record, of course. Mm-hmm. When we come back, Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, season preview show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our NHL season preview special. Earlier today, Richard Pollock of this fine program had the opportunity to talk to Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail. We've broken it down into two parts. Here is part one of Richard's conversation about the Western Conference with Eric Dehatchik.
We're joined by Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail and Globesports.com. Eric, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Always my pleasure.
Yeah, it's another season preview. You're always great to join us for the season previews and the playoff previews, Eric. And I guess, you know, we're going to focus on the Western Conference here. And why don't we start with the Winnipeg Jets? Obviously, they're, you know, evaluated ad nauseum here by everybody on our station and everybody in the city. What's the perspective about the Winnipeg Jets outside of Winnipeg, and what do you expect for them this season?
I think they're a real tough team to call. I mean, it has a lot to do with realignment. You know, they will be playing, you know, in a conference that they're not used to, and I think a lot of teams that have, you know, that haven't seen Winnipeg in 2 years because of just the nature of last year's 48-game shortened schedule, the Jets will be brand new to them as well. So they are, for me, they are the hardest team to come to terms with how they're going to do. You know, I the way I see the West in general is that I think there are six teams that are clearly better than everyone else. So unless they have a catastrophic injury or something completely, you know, goes wrong, I think the three California teams, I think St. Louis and Chicago, and I also think Vancouver, are teams that are going to make the playoffs. But after that, I mean, to me, it's wide open. I can paint a scenario for the remaining eight teams, with the possible exception of Calgary, where they make the playoffs, and I can paint a second scenario where they don't. And so I put Winnipeg squarely in that group. I really do think that Chicago and St. Louis are the class of the Central Division. But if Winnipeg gets slightly improved goaltending from Pavlik, which I think has to happen, if those three core defensemen all stay healthy, if Jacob Trouba can play at a high level, you know, I think he's going to be great, but I don't know if he's going to be great right away as a teenager playing defense in the National Hockey League. And then if you know, that secondary scoring comes through, which they really need. I mean, somebody has to play with Evander Kane that gives them a legitimate, honest-to-goodness second line. If all those chips fall into place, they are a playoff team. But the problem there is that, you know, you need a whole lot of things to go right, and if one or two things go wrong, then I think they're one of those teams that could just miss. But, you know, to me, you know, just speaking broadly about the National Hockey League, there are a handful of elite teams. There are a few teams that are just going to be really bad, and then there's a group of about 20 that are close to being interchangeable, and I think it's a function of the salary cap and some other factors, and then it's just a matter of how they get it together during the regular season.
I think you're exactly right. You know, preparing our predictions for the show today, it was, you know, next to impossible when you're talking about those, who's going to be the 3-4 or the 4 seed in both of those conferences in terms of the playoffs with the new format. It's really difficult to project. I mean, so many ifs, this, if that, and as you just mentioned, you know, what happens with the Jets, and you know, you mentioned somebody like a Minnesota. You know, I look at their roster and they made some changes over the offseason. They haven't changed too much. Obviously they have some young players, but they need, you know, Charlie Coyle to play well, and maybe Granlund steps up. How does Heatley respond? What do you think of a team like that?
See, I kind of like the way Minnesota looks, because I know a lot of people are saying, you know, did they really get better? Well, if you analyze their moves per se, probably not, you know, because, you know, you take Setoguchi out of that lineup and you put Niederreiter in, and that's pretty much a wash. I mean, most of the moves that they made, you know, you would say are a wash. So how do they get better? Well, it's just as you say, you know, I think they have high hopes for Coyle, for Granlund. You know, I guess Jason Zucker hasn't had a great camp, so he probably won't be a guy that is probably not going to be in the lineup on opening night, and he might be a year or two down the road. And then, of course, the goaltending of Nicholas Backstrom and Josh Harding, which traditionally, that has never been an issue in Minnesota. I mean, you know, you never worried about how they would defend the puck. You would only worry about how they would put the puck in the net. So now, you know, in the aftermath of the Suter acquisition, the Parisi acquisition, you know, they have a lot of scoring. They should be one of the more exciting teams to watch in the National Hockey League. So it all hinges on how well those young kids play. And by all accounts, because I did not see Minnesota in the preseason, but by all accounts, Coyle's been terrific, and Granlund's been quite good. And so then you get a full season out of Jason Pominville, who's one of those, you know, reliable point-per-game guys who just kind of gets the job done. So if there's chemistry with him and Koivu and Parisi on that one line, and if Heatley, you know, I mean, Heatley is one of those guys where you keep hearing, yeah, this is the year, yes, he has something to prove. I mean, he really just has to go out and prove to the NHL world at large that he is not finished and that he still has something left in the tank. I mean, he is one of those guys with a natural ability to finish. And will he be, you know, a guy that can do that more effectively coming out of the two-hole or maybe even the three-hole? I mean, it'll be interesting to see where they play him, because I know that they would ideally like to play him on the second line, but, you know, some of those kids are knocking at the door. So, I mean, if it all comes together for Minnesota, of those teams that we've just discussed, they have the greatest upside. They have a greater one-year upside than Nashville does, a greater one-year upside than Dallas, I think, a greater one-year upside than Colorado. I think that they could be a very good team, provided all those things fall into place for them.
You know, you mentioned Colorado there. They have some dynamic offensive forces and young talent, Deshane Landeskog, but also, you know, added a passer like Tanguay and all-around player like O'Reilly. Is their defense and goaltending going to hold them back?
That's exactly right. You see, that's how I distinguish between Minnesota and Colorado, because I think Minnesota just has a better defense. I mean, if you have a Ryan Suter to you know, roll out there 25 to 27 minutes, I mean, he'll likely lead the league in mm-hmm. minutes played again. And so he is a commodity or a player or a guy that Colorado doesn't have. I mean, Colorado's best guy is probably Eric Johnson. Right. He just has not evolved into the kind of impact defenseman that Suter did or that Shea Weber did or so on and so forth. So that, to me, is the big question mark with Colorado. That and Patrick Roy, who, by the way, I picked as the coach of the year. I'm just really interested in seeing what Patrick is going to do there. I mean, I covered him as a player, really like him. You know, he's one of those people, you know, some people like him, some people really, really don't like him. But I do, and I think that his enthusiasm and he's so immersed in the hockey culture, and players love that. You know, I think it will be a fun time in Colorado. I think those guys are really going to enjoy playing for Patrick Roy. And you're right. I mean, you take their top two lines and the fact that they've got Nathan MacKinnon coming, I mean, they could be a dynamic offensive team. And there have been times in Patrick Roy's career where he has played on some dynamic offensive teams, and basically he said, I'll stop the puck, you guys go out and score. Well, you know, that will fall to Semyon Varlamov right now, and I'm just not sure. He's just been too inconsistent for me in his NHL career. I get that he has the skill set to get there. Maybe this is the year that it clicks for him. I mean, sometimes a guy like, for example, Carey Lehtinen, you know, he's on the cusp, and then people give up on him because it's like, oh, he's never going to get there, and then he does. Yeah. And so he became a real good player for Dallas after years and years of struggling. And if Varlamov can do that, if he can become as steady as Lehtinen did for Dallas, then that solves a lot of their problems, and I think that overcomes the fact that the defense is probably the weak link on that team.
And you mentioned Lehtinen, Eric, in terms of Dallas, and obviously there's a bunch of changes there over the offseason, bringing a new general manager, Jim Neal, bringing a new coach, Lindy Ruff, veteran defenseman, Sergei Gonchar, and then the huge Tyler Seguin trade, and the Horkov trade, and Dan Ellis. I mean, a ton of changes in Dallas. I like what they're doing long-term. I'm just unsure of what they can do this year. How do you feel about them?
Yeah, just like that. I mean, it's still too many question marks. I mean, Eric Cole's playing on the first line. You know, is he going to be able to contribute? I mean, if it's the 30-goal, you know, good two-way, playing with an edge Eric Cole that we've seen at different times in his career, then, yeah, he makes that Seguin and Ben line look really good. Nikushkin, everybody tells me, again, I didn't see Dallas, but everybody tells me he had a terrific exhibition season. But is he going to be like Tarasenko was last year, who was real good early, and then towards the end of the season, as the pace picked up, Coach Ken Hitchcock didn't really trust him in St. Louis. So, you know, Grigorenko, the same thing. You know, last year in Buffalo, I think they had high hopes that he would come in and really make an impact. And then once the rigors of the NHL season caught up with them, the transition just became too difficult. So, he probably will become an exceptional NHLer. I just don't see it right now. I do think Tyler Seguin is going to have the kind of year that everyone thinks he has. You know, I guess it would be, you know, smart to sometimes be counterintuitive about these things and think that, you know, you're just conceding him, you know, the kind of points that his skill set and talent would suggest he's going to have. But I just think that the opportunity to play as the number one and the kind of key offensive minutes that he's going to get, and the fact that he's playing with a guy like Jamie Benn, who's so reliable and so consistent, I think that will be two-thirds of a very good line. But I just think that there's not enough pieces beyond those two to make me think that this is the year that Dallas necessarily makes the leap forward. And, you know, but one of my favorite players in the NHL is there, and that's Ray Whitney, who, you know, reliably and year in and year out just seems to get the job done. And I'm very interested to see if he's got one more year left in the tank.
We're joined by Eric DeHatrick of the Globe and Mail and Globesports.com. And go pick up the Globe and Mail this morning, comprehensive NHL preview in there in the Saturday morning's paper. Eric, before we move over to the Pacific Division, the St. Louis Blues, the team we talked about last year in the playoffs, and you correctly predicted that Los Angeles would beat them, and your concern was mainly based upon the fact that they maybe didn't have that scorer, that one guy to rely upon, that scoring was an issue. I look at the changes they've made this offseason, I kind of say, you know, Derek Roy takes the place of Andy McDonald, but they lose Perron via trade, they bring in Pierre, they don't seem to have addressed that issue. Do you still think they need to get that kind of player to be a difference maker when it comes to the playoffs?
Well, put it this way, if they don't get that player, then it's going to be a hard slog through the regular season and through every round of the playoffs. Because, yes, I just think that you know, when they look at a guy like what Marion Gabrick did for Columbus when he went in there. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes it's just nice to have one guy that can be that sniper. Now, you know, could Tarasenko be that guy? Maybe eventually. I don't see it happening this year, not in terms of how they're lining up. And while I really like some of their young players, like I think Jaden Schwartz is going to be a real good player at some point, and I think that there's, you know, there's an upside there for some of those guys. You know, TJ Oshie has just been hurt a lot, and you know, but can he be the guy? I still think of him as an energy guy, and Derek Roy, again, you know, wasn't really that good for Vancouver in the playoffs last year. So yeah, I do think that's the one, you know, if you're looking to poke a hole in sort of is St. Louis championship contender scenario, that's the one hole that you might poke at them, because certainly I don't think there's a better defense core in the National Hockey League. I mean, Bomeister and Pietrangelo as a number one pair, Shattenkirk behind them. You know, I still like what Jackman brings to the mix. I still like, you know, the physical presence that Polak brings. And, you know, we haven't talked about Yaroslav Halak, but he's another guy that he really needs to show that he can be a 55 to 60 game goaltender, not get hurt, and try to recapture the magic that he had for Montreal a couple of years ago in the playoffs. So there are some question marks there, but the one thing that they have, everyone will tell you, you know, in a sort of a parity-laced NHL with 82 games where, you know, eventually everybody's going to have 3, 4, 5 guys on the injury list. St. Louis is the one team, because of its depth up front, that can survive that a lot better than anyone else. There are so many teams that if they lose one or two key scorers, there's just nobody to step up and fill up in the void, and St. Louis has that plenty. I mean, they can run 3 lines, and each one of those lines will score about the same, and that is one advantage they have that you just don't see very often in a league that has the kind of parity that the salary cap forces you to have.
Moving out west, and you know, the Edmonton Oilers bring in Dallas Eakins, and they make a trade for David Perron, sign Andrew Ferentz, who I think is an underrated defenseman, although he's probably not underrated anymore. But when you talked to scouts last year, Eric, and I talked to a couple, they said the issue with Edmonton, they're just too small up front. And then looking at the other teams in this division, LA and San Jose and Vancouver, is the Oilers, not only maybe their lack of defensive ability, and some people have questions about their goaltending, but also is their lack of size up front going to cost them?
It could. You know, I think, I mean, you know, it's pretty easy to say this, but you want to start fast, or you want to start at least reasonably well in a season like this where the races, I think, are going to be so close for those final playoff spots. So it's hard when you start behind the eight ball. You don't have Nugent Hopkins for the first month. You don't have Sam Gagner for the first 2 months. I think that with all hands on deck, Edmonton is a team that is closing in on a breakthrough. I just think they have so much skill up front, and those young defensemen are starting to get a little bit better. And as you say, you know, a guy like Ferentz is really going to help, I think, Justin Schultz mature as a player. And I actually don't mind Dubnyk's goaltending. I think he's going to be okay. He may not ever be a guy that, you know, that is in the Vezina Trophy conversation, but there's only 4 or 5 of those every year anyway, and I think that he is going to be a reliable enough goaltender that he will be fine. But you're right, their size up front is an issue, and the fact that, you know, they have to have Taylor Hall playing out of position at center right now. You would just really like to see, you know, they've had this plan in Edmonton for a long period of time. It would be nice to see all of those players in their proper slots, starting fresh, starting healthy, and then seeing what they can do. Because I think teams like Edmonton, eventually when they get it, it comes really fast. And so I think they're a year or two away. And if they can develop a little bit more of a physical presence, I mean, I know he plays defense, but Darnell Nurse, I think, is going to be that guy. Mm-hmm. But that'll be 2 or 3 years from now where he can come into the NHL and make an impact. So it would be nice if at some point they can turn around and just find a Milan Lucic. I mean, he was the guy that Craig McTavish referenced at the press conference where he took over the job from Steve Tambellini. And I thought it was interesting that the fact that he reached for a name like that and would even reference a player on another team. But it was like, Milan Lucic's don't grow on trees, and we know that that's what we need, and ultimately we would like to get that. But how do you go and acquire something like that? You just don't get good young power forwards in trade. So that's something that they're going to have to either draft or develop, and you're right, the fact that they don't have it right now is probably one of the reasons why they may not make the playoffs this year.
You're listening to our interview with Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail. When we come back after the break, part 2 with Eric breaking down the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Earlier today, Richard had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail about the Western Conference. Here is part two of Richard's interview with Eric Dehatchik.
The Phoenix Coyotes, they shore up their ownership issue, and then they spend a lot of money, and they bring in Mike Ribeiro, a guy who I think is going to really help their power play, especially from the half boards. But does this team, you know, again, you talk about all those bubble teams that you mentioned earlier. I think this is one of them. You know, they have goaltending. 2 years ago, Smith was great. Last year, not so much. Dave Tippett's a great coach. Ekman Larson may be able to take that next step this year. Does Mike Ribeiro help push this team to the level of at least, you know, contending for a 3-4 spot?
Yeah, well, they are one of the teams that I saw in the preseason. They were through Calgary here on Wednesday. Had a chance to visit with a lot of their players and the coaching staff and the management staff there. And it's hard not to get carried away by their enthusiasm, because the big thing that Ribeiro does is it pushes guys down the depth chart to places where they need to play. And I proposed that to Dave Tippett in our interview, and he agreed completely that, you know, they've been trying to use Martin Hanzel as the number one guy, and he just isn't that guy. I mean, to me, Hanzel is Joel Otto with a little bit more of an upside. Yeah. And if you play him as a two, or ideally as a three, he's a terrific guy. He can shut down players for. I mean, he's just like a really, really good player. But he can't be a number one because he just doesn't have the offensive ability. So, you know, Tippett believes that what Ribeiro brings is what they were missing after they lost Ray Whitney. Just a pure skilled guy, a great puck distributor, a guy who I really think was a key to making that Washington power play goal. I mean, Washington had 48 power play goals last year. I think they were by far the best team. Mm-hmm. And Phoenix was 25th. And they just didn't finish on the power play. And so if Ribeiro can give them that, you know, I think a team like Phoenix that is going to try and grind out a whole bunch of 2-1 and 3-2 wins, the difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs is going to be scoring, you know, 15 extra power play goals over 82 games, because, you know, maybe that turns overtime losses into one goal wins, or just makes it easier to pull games out. So if they can keep that defensive mentality and presence that they've always had and just score a few more goals, yes, they could be a team that pushes for that last spot. I mean, it's going to be tough. I think the Pacific is great, because I really do like those California teams. And I think, you know, Vancouver, when they figure it all out, is going to be pretty good. So, you know, are you competing for, you know, one of the top four spots in the division, or are you competing for that last wild card and sort of being the crossover team as the fifth playoff team? I think that it's more likely that the lesser teams in the West are going to compete for that last wild card spot.
I like that new format. It does make it more interesting. You mentioned the California teams. We'll get to Anaheim in a second. L.A. and San Jose, for the most part, didn't really make any changes. You know, Tyler Kennedy, Matt Fratton, and, you know, Bernier's out, but and Thomas Greitz. But overall, these teams are very similar. I guess part A, part B. San Jose hasn't changed. Why should people think that they're going to be able to do anything different this year? And Los Angeles, do you think that they were too tired at the end of last year, and that was the main reason that they weren't able to give Chicago a real run for their money?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with both of those teams in the playoffs last year. I had a chance to see their, you know, their strengths and their warts up close. And you're right. I mean, San Jose, I mean, they'll put, you know, Thomas Hertl in there to play a top six role. They are like a lot of teams that, you know, that knows that the window of opportunity to win a championship is closing fast. But they believe they have the pieces, and they just need one of those years where it all falls into place. I mean, the one thing that people may forget is that San Jose and Los Angeles had a Tong war in the playoffs, and it came right down to the wire, and it was just really the fact that San Jose couldn't win on the road in the playoffs last year that saw them eliminated in the second round. So I think that gave them the faith, I guess, in what they have, that rather than try and dismantle the team, you know, that they should take this core and try over 82 games to see how they played out. That is one of the, I don't want to say that it's an excuse, but when teams failed last year, I think in a lot of different places in the National Hockey League, when the general managers had to report to ownership, it was a mixed up season. You know, everybody had trouble getting their rhythm. It's just difficult to assess accurately where we are as an organization on the basis of 48 games with no training camp and sort of the craziness that we saw last year. And I think that for the most part, you know, everybody agreed that that's true. You know, so, you know, in San Jose, I think it was like, you know, what's the alternative? I mean, this is the team that we have. You know, we're competitive. We will be competitive again. If one break goes our way in that series, you know, we're the team in the Final Four, and you know, who knows where we go from there. So that's the reason that they're standing pat, and I think that they'll be competitive again. Los Angeles, I mean, they're young. That's the one thing about Los Angeles that people don't realize. You know, the core pieces, that the players that are difference makers in L.A., Quick in goal, Doughty and Voinoff on the blue line. You know, Kopitar is still young. Brown, Carter, and Richards are all from that draft class of 2003. Yeah. These guys are in their prime. So if I'm Los Angeles, and you know, you win 2 years ago, and you're in the final three last year, basically, you know, why would you make any changes? So, you know, I mean, Matt Fratton comes in. He's playing on the second line with Carter and Richards. You know, let's see how he can do. You know, don't love him. I'm not sure that they love him so far, but he's an effective player by the sounds of it. And you know, I mean, the one thing where it could go wrong in LA is that Jonathan Quick gets hurt. They just don't really have anybody that can come in and play the kind of big minutes that he plays. I mean, they always had Bernier there as the backup plan. And last year, when Quick struggled in the early stages because he was coming off that off-season back surgery, Bernier was terrific for them. He was absolutely terrific. And in L.A., you know, they're touch and go to make the playoffs. Both years that they, you know, they went so deep in the playoffs. And I think that Bernier was the guy that really got them there because he won a lot of games for them and had terrific goals against average. So this year it's been Scrivens, and I'm not, you know, that's not the same. That's not, you know, that is a lesser player than what they had there before. So, but if, you know, if Quick is sound, and I think that they believe that he is, otherwise they wouldn't have made the trade for Bernier. They just have, you know, real good pieces and a real good system. And, you know, and it seems that, you know, like Daryl Sutter is one of those coaches, I've known him forever. You know, at some point, maybe his style and voice and approach will wear on those players, but I don't think that's happened yet.
The Anaheim Ducks, Eric, you mentioned, like in the California teams, and they lose, well, they trade Bobby Ryan, they get a fair amount back for him, but probably nobody at his level right now, and maybe won't be at his level, period. The skeptic in me wonders, you know, without Bobby Ryan, Getzlaff and Perry now having gotten those big contracts, not to say they won't be motivated because it's an Olympic year, but they're secure now and maybe a little bit more secure than they were before. Timo Salonen, a year older. No Surrey, although he didn't play as much near the end of the season as maybe people think. I have some concerns about that team being a big contender. What makes you a little more confident about them?
Well, I mean, you're right. You know, Bobby Ryan, that was a salary cap move, pure and simple. You know, when they gave the big money to Perry and Getzlaff, they just there was no way that they could ultimately extend Ryan too. So, first of all, I don't think Corey Perry had a very good year last year. You know, he struggled.
Right. Yeah.
He struggled with. I mean, Bob Murray, the general manager, told me this, that he thought that the contract became a distraction for him, and so when they finally signed it, you know, he was a little bit behind and he got going, but he didn't have a great playoff against Detroit. He just, like, he can be an impact player who did not have an impact year. So I think that Corey Perry comes in really motivated. You know, he's not a guy I think that's going to take the money and run. I think he's going to come in and say, okay, now that, you know, this thing is settled, I've had a chance to have a full training camp, I think he's going to be better than people think. I think he will have an improved year over last year. I don't think Getzlaff can have much of a better year because he was terrific. But he's a guy that really wants to play in the Olympics again. I mean, I think everyone remembers in 2010. I mean, he probably wasn't healthy enough to crack that Olympic lineup, but he put himself into the lineup for that last game against Edmonton and played through that ankle injury, I think it was, and was on the team and then I think had an impact for Canada at the Olympics. So I think he's a good player. And I think that, you know, that Ryan, for successive coaches, it just wasn't really a great fit there anyway in all those years. So I think Silverberg's going to come in and be good. I think Nick Bonino is a guy that people don't know very well who's going to get a chance to be the number two center. They're very high on him. And it was funny because Dustin Penner got the opportunity to play on the big line in training camp and just really, really struggled. I think the hope was when they signed him that coming back to where he began in the NHL and playing with really two of his closest friends in the game would make a difference. And he wasn't very good. So the other day he was back on the fourth line. But there's a possibility that if he gets into shape and he can get his act together that he might see some minutes up there. And if not him, it'll be Kyle Palmieri. But, you know, there are players there that, you know, like Emerson Adam, who showed a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, showed a lot. You know, I think he's hurt a little bit right now. But I think he's going to come in, and I think that, especially in the playoffs, Bruce Boudreaux showed a lot of faith in him. He was a good player for them in the playoffs. I mean, to me, one of the big question marks in Anaheim is the goaltending. They definitely have their goaltender of the future, John Gibson, in place. He didn't have a great training camp, was farmed out. I think the expectation is that he will play the whole season in the minors. It's a contract year for Jonas Hiller. You know, Victor Fast had that terrific start last year and then was, you know, okay after that. So they need those guys to be good. You know, they're going to go probably with the two-headed goalie monster again. But you know, will their goaltending hold up? And their defense, you're right. I mean, Beauchemin is going to be ready to play coming off that ACL surgery. That's a good thing. I think Cam Fowler is probably going to step up and emerge this year. You know, he's been knocking on the door. He's just got too much skill, and he's been in the NHL long enough now that I think that he's going to take the next step and become an impact player. So I think they have a lot. They have a lot there, and the players seem to be happy. It's a really good dressing room. You know, you go into that dressing room, and you just feel a sense of closeness. The guys like being there. They like playing there. They like playing for Bruce Boudreaux. It's just they're a team that, you know, that I think is pretty good.
That's great insight, Eric. You know, because from afar you don't get to be in there on the dressing room. You see some of the talent, but that's an interesting perspective. And there certainly is a ton of potential there. And to move to we're not going to touch too much on Calgary, although you're based in Calgary, because I feel this will be the season that they're kind of throw away and get a great draft pick. Vancouver Canucks, on the other hand, a ton of pressure there. They bring in John Tortorella. You know, he talked about the early in camp. He wanted to just get to know the players. He wasn't behind the bench initially. He didn't teach his system until later on. And then you kind of heard Roberto Luongo saying, well, if you're going to block shots, you better block them, because I'm kind of not used to that style. On the ice, they kind of lost more guys than they got this offseason. What do you see for this team?
Well, no, you've hit all the high points there. There's no question about it. I mean, first of all, when I'm in the Vancouver dressing room, what I'm really impressed by is the demeanor of Roberto Luongo and the Twins, and to some extent Burrows, who I know everybody hates. But these guys are absolutely transparent in their honesty and their evaluations. I mean, often when you walk into an NHL dressing room, you get a lot of blather, and I really enjoy dealing with the key guys on the Canucks, because they're just resolute. They're strong people. So my faith in the way Vancouver plays is often just because I think that they've got such really character guys in the key roles, and I think that they're well liked among, you know, the team, the players playing lower down on the depth chart. And so I think the Sedins have got lots left. I think that, you know, whoever plays on that line, probably be Burrows to start the year by the sounds, but I think that they're going to be really good. I think that they understand, too, that, you know, they came close 2 years ago, and that there's not going to be a ton of opportunity to win championships. But, you know, the fact that they had to keep those kids, Shinkarak and Horvat, tells you exactly that they are not where they want to be in terms of their bottom six forwards. And, you know, I don't think that those guys are going to play the season, but I think that they want to show their fan base that, yes, finally, for the first time, we have legitimate prospects in the pipeline, that these guys will eventually be NHL players. So it would be nice, in a perfect world, you know, these guys would be not 18 and 19, but 20 and 21, 22. And if you could somehow fast forward their development and put the players that they're going to become in the lineup right now, then I would put Vancouver right there as a championship contender. But the fact that they're not there, you know, they need, you know, the Santarellis to step up. They need David Booth to play good minutes and show that he can still be an NHL player. So they have an awful lot of question marks. And you know, one of them is just how the players adjust to John Tortorella's style. I mean, he insists that, you know, that it will be different and better, and that he's not going to alienate the players. I like the fact that the Sedins have said publicly that, hey, we've played for tough coaches in the past. We played for them in Sweden. We played for Mark Crawford. Really, the only players' coach, if you want to use that euphemism, that they had is Vigneault. And so, you know, I think they're capable of adjusting without any problems. They're just really good people, and I think that they know that they have a job to do. That's part of what it is to be an NHL player. You have a job to do. You have a boss. This is the boss. Get out there and do the job. And they don't, you know, make excuses or hide behind false premises. They just go out there and get it done. So, you know, they should be fine. They should be, you know, a team that wins a lot more than it loses. You know, will push for the top spot, but thin, right? Thin after the first four or five guys up front, and can't afford to lose, you know, one or two key guys. If they do, then, you know, the potential for the bottom falling out of one of the elite teams in the West is probably greater in Vancouver than it is anywhere else.
We always do put you on the spot, Eric, unfortunately, as it may be. Predictions for this off for this year, and you know, the Western Conference and Eastern Conference champions, who you see meeting in the final and who you see winning?
Well, I think I had to do that for the paper today, and I went back and forth on it because, again, you know, at the start of our conversation, we talked about how hard it is to separate sometimes, you know, the sort of the middle of the pack. But I still like Los Angeles in the Pacific. I still like Chicago in the Central. I do think, you know, we didn't talk about them extensively, but, right, you know, they pretty much returned all of the key pieces, and, you know, so motivation will be the big thing there. You know, they were not a motivated team the year after they won the Stanley Cup the last time. And Stan Bowman tells me that they've learned from that, and they will be more motivated this year. So if that's true, and if they stay healthy, I do still think that Chicago and Los Angeles are the two best teams in the Western Conference. The East is interesting. I really like what Boston did. You know, when I think about, yep, how Boston, how successful they've been without a power play, you know, and then I think that Jerome McGinley has enough left that he and Torrey Krug, those two factors could transform the Boston power play. So Boston with a power play then becomes, I think, a dominant team because even without a power play, they were one of the elite teams. So I like them. I like Detroit. I think Detroit last year in the first half was, we're not so sure, but they got better and better, and that's a testament to the coaching of Mike Babcock, the fact that, you know, that they were able to improve on the fly in the lockout shortened season. And at the end of the year, you know, they were the one team that gave Chicago a push. So, you know, when I look at the Atlantic, I see Detroit, I see Boston as the two best teams, and I have a hard time picking against Pittsburgh in the Metropolitan, which I think is one of the quirkier divisions. I saw the Rangers a fair bit in the training camp. They have a lot of work to do there, and you know, the Islanders are improving, but I just think Pittsburgh is the class by far of the Metropolitan Division. So I think I picked Boston probably to win the regular season Atlantic Division, but Detroit to come out of there in the playoffs, and I think I have Pittsburgh coming through. So you won't get any surprises from me. I'm picking the elite teams because I think over 82 games, I think they will be the elite teams, barring a catastrophe, an injury to a Crosby, a Datsyuk, a player of that caliber.
Eric DeHatchik of the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. Pick up the paper NHL comprehensive preview this morning. And Eric, thank you for joining our comprehensive radio preview on the Legal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday afternoon.
Well, as you know, it's always my pleasure to talk to you.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Big props to my colleague Richard Pollock for that comprehensive interview with the Globe and Mail's Eric DeHatchik. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download both on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. We've had a lot of questions come to us via our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve, regarding the health of Dustin Byfuglien. He did leave last night's game in Saskatoon banged up with a little bit of an injury. Here's Winnipeg Jets head coach Claude Noel on the health of Dustin Byfuglien.
Should it have been icing when Byfuglien got banged up there? Or there was a discussion with the referee after.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, you know, for me, I was more concerned with Buff and his potential injury that concerned me more so than what the call was on that. The other thing was at that particular juncture that, you know, the game was another concern of mine.
He's okay today?
Yeah, he's good today.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Wendy Liebman, concert series event tonight at Rumors. One final night after a week of absolutely killing it. Check out Wendy Liebman tonight at Rumors, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, we continue with our NHL season preview by focusing now on the Western Conference. We just heard from Eric DeHatchik, that comprehensive interview conducted earlier today with our colleague Richard Pollock. Gentlemen, we start with the Stanley Cup champion Chicago Blackhawks. Do you expect the Blackhawks to have a Stanley Cup hangover, or do you think that this is they have as good a chance as any at being repeat Stanley Cup champions?
So hard to repeat in the NHL, Drew, playing a long season, and you know they've lost some players. I don't think they've lost the core guys they have to worry about. You know, they traded guys like Frolik and some other, you know, lose Emery. But overall, their defense is exactly the same. Their forward group is great. Just as good, of, I think, you know, the best team in the Central Division, and quite arguably the best team in the Western Conference, if not the league.
Richie, there might be a bit of a Stanley Cup hangover early on in the season, but I don't expect there to be anything like there was when they won their first Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And I don't expect there to be anything like there was with the Vancouver Canucks after 2011.
But they lost a lot of their roster after the first one, though, not
right.
Like this.
Right, and when you talk about some of the guys that they lost, Bolin, Frolik, Oles, Stahlberg, that's not anywhere near the guys that they lost last time when you talk about Ladd, Versteeg, and Bufflin and those guys. So Chicago's still the envy of the NHL. And if anything, there always exists question marks at the goaltender position, but Crawford, you know, proved himself last year in the playoffs and in the regular season. So to me, this is still, you know, the envy of this division. I still think they're going to finish first in the division. And, you know, you've got Hanzus back. They re-signed him because he was so great in the playoffs. And Andrew Shaw is going to have an increased role. And it looks like Bickle's going to be a mainstay on that top line with Taves and Kane. But they're still just so solid top to bottom. And I can't find any reason not to pick them first in this division and first in the West.
St. Louis Blues traded out David Perron this offseason. They also lost Andy McDonald, Jamie Langenbrunner, who's obviously at the end of his career. They bring in Brendan Morrow late this offseason, bring in Derek Roy, bring in Magnus Piarvi in that trade with Edmonton for David Perron. Is the St. Louis Blues lineup the deepest in the Western Conference? Is it the best?
Not the best. The deepest in terms of forward, but not the most talented. I mean, depth is one thing, talent's another. They have a lot of interchangeable parts. Eric Dehatchik mentioned last segment, you know, they have much, or two segments ago, how much talent they do have and how they have a lot of guys they can plug in the lineup. Their defense is great. Their goaltending depth, Halak, Elliott, Jake Allen, who's apparently been the best goalie in camp. Derek Roy kind of is a McDonald player, although I like McDonald a little bit better. Jaden Schwartz is a really nice player, really can find the seams, good hockey sense. Big team, can skate, good coaching, great defense. Just a really solid team. I think they need a big-time offensive player to be a cup favorite or cup contender, but they're an upper echelon squad, and they're a playoff team. I think they're the second-best team in this division.
Yeah, I agree with everything Richie said, and the only question for me about the St. Louis Blues is can they win some more playoff rounds, because they're going to make the playoffs, and they're most likely going to get out of the first round, but again, are they going to get over the hump? They're most likely not going to play the LA Kings this year.
Exactly.
Because of the crossover, the new realignment, but I like the moves they made, and Brendan Morrow will most likely play a third-line wing role, but I like that move, and, you know, Derek Roy is better at face-offs, and he'll be the second-line center. They're strong up the middle. As Richie said, they don't have any superstars, but they just have an overall solid team. They've bought into Ken Hitchcock's system, which is defense first, start with the goaltender out, Halak and Elliott, whoever you put out. Those are both extremely good goaltenders and probably the best group of defensemen in the NHL. When you've got Barrett Jackman and Roman Polak in the bottom pairing there, you know, that would be a second pairing for a lot of teams. Bomeister, Pietrangelo are unbelievable together. So this is an elite team. You know, it's just, again, can you get over the hump, get into the Stanley Cup Finals?
The Minnesota Wild acquired Nino Niederreiter from the New York Islanders in exchange for Cal Clutterbuck at the NHL draft. They bring in Keith Ballard and Matt Cook as free agents. Mm-hmm. They subtract Devin Setoguchi and Matt Cullen from their roster. Are the Wild, the young talent on the Wild, are they better? Are they ready to take a step forward after last year's just happy to be there playoff performance?
I'm not sure, but they're still going in the right direction, Drew. Still tough to beat those top teams. They're going to need some time. Matt Cook will help the penalty kill. He was 18th overall last year. He's a really good penalty killer, really smart player, although I can't stand him. You know, if I look at the team as compared to the Jets, I look at Parise's better than Ladd, Koivu's better than Little, and Wheeler and Pominville. Some people would go both ways on that. So you look at the second line, you know, Kane is better than what they have there right now. But instead of Gucci, obviously don't think that much of her. They wouldn't have dealt him to a division rival. So I think overall, and the talent of Charlie Coyle apparently looks great in camp, I think top to bottom, they're a little bit better than the Jets team. I think they're the third best team in this division because of the potential of the young players. The established players are good. And Ryan Suter, because he's a top three defenseman in the NHL.
Yeah, Charlie Coyle looked really good against the Jets in that preseason game earlier in the preseason. And I'm kind of torn on the Minnesota Wild. You know, they made the playoffs last year. I'm leaning towards them not making the playoffs, and I don't know if they've improved enough for them to make the playoffs. And Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin was a great combination last year, and Ballard will probably pair up with Scandella or Clayton Stoner, and then you've got Prosser and Bloom who are kind of battling for another spot there. I just think that they're going to struggle again to score goals. And, you know, Granlund, it's not even guaranteed if he's going to make the team. It's going to be Granlund or Zucker is probably not going to make the team. And, you know, Danny Heatley, can he return to his form? Can he get back to 30 goals? Or is he kind of relegated to kind of a 20-goal, 40-point guy now? Because he's on the decline, I think, in his career. So, to me, I don't know if they've done enough to make me think they're a playoff team this year.
The Dallas Stars rebuilt their entire team right up the middle, acquiring Tyler Seguin and Rich Peverly in the trade from Boston. Also acquired Sean Horkoff from the Edmonton Oilers. So now their, you know, their centers are now Seguin, Horkoff, Peverly, Fiddler. You know, do they have enough? Have they done enough to propel this team into the playoffs?
Yeah, and look at that compared to the Jets. If we're looking from a Winnipeg perspective, Lettinen's a better goalie than Pavlik. I think the Jets' D as a whole is better than Dallas's. I have some concerns about Dallas defending, although I do with the Jets as well, and I do like Brendan Dillon and Jamie Oleksiak. Top line, you know, Ben or Ladd, you're taking Ben long-term. You might take Ladd now, although I don't know if I would. Seguin over Little, I think, and then Wheeler over Cole. Then the rest of the team, you know, Ray Whitney's going to get your points. Horkoff's a dependable guy up the middle, more dependable in the role you want him in than Jokinen. Cody Eakin, the Winnipeg boy. Peverly is injured right now, but, you know, his offensive player can play, you know, he's a tweener, but he's not a bad player. Fiddler's a very good penalty killer, faceoffs. Like, I feel like, you know, you flip a coin, Dallas is better 1 year and the Jets are better another year. But I think they're both fringe teams.
Yeah, I don't have Dallas making the playoffs this year. I like the moves that they've made. They've clearly gotten better in the middle. And I think, look at Rich Peverly, he's most likely going to be on the third line with Cody Eakin and Chiasson, who's a rookie. And you've got Nikushkin, who we haven't mentioned. They've got some young forwards there who look impressive in the preseason and should be good this year. But, you know, their defense, it's a little young for me, and they're still growing. And, you know, you bring in Gonchar, he'll be good on the power play. But defensively, he doesn't move like he used to. Mm-hmm. You know, Oleksiak and Dillon, those are big physical guys, but they're limited offensively. Lettinen's good in net, as always. But to me, this is not a playoff team this year, even though I think they're going to score more goals, but I still think they're going to have trouble defensively, and that's why I don't think they're a playoff team.
The Nashville Predators went out and they made a splash in the free agency market, more so with depth guys, Victor Stahlberg, Matt Cullen, Eric Nystrom, Matt Hendricks. Those are the big additions. Seth Jones, of course, getting him at the draft. Mm-hmm. Is this a bounce-back year for the usually playoff-bound Predators? Is Seth Jones ready to play with Shea Weber?
I don't know. I don't think he's going to play with Weber, but no. They have right-handed guys, so they might have to play him on the left side. I don't know what's going to happen. Might play with Klein. But wherever he does play, he's still a young defenseman. He's still a rookie defenseman. Their roster is still a bunch of guys who do a lot of things but can't really score. Stahlberg's injured now, but he can skate. Hendricks can skate, and Nystrom can skate. They're all great skaters. Who can score? Unless Colin Wilson has a breakout year, which is possible, it's tough. Rene's a great goalie. I always pick against Nashville, and they always do well. I think last year I picked Nashville to make the playoffs, and they bombed out. So I'm going to pick them. I'm going to pick no playoffs again for Nashville, but they'll probably make it now.
I have them finishing last in the division. This was the worst offensive team in the NHL last year, and they haven't really done anything to change that. I like the moves they've made because it fits the Nashville system. Fast, hardworking checkers like
cheap.
Stahlberg and Cullen and Nystrom and Hendricks, who was on Washington for many years. And then you've got, you know, Philip Forsberg looks like he should make the team in Spalding. You've got some young guys there. But everything depends on Rene and keeping the puck out of your net, which they do a good job of. But you can't win every game 2-1. And they have trouble. They have more trouble than any other team scoring goals. So I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. And I got them seventh in the division.
Last team in the Central Division are the Colorado Avalanche. Their offseason acquisitions included Alex Tanguay and Corey Sarich from the Calgary Flames. course, Nathan MacKinnon drafted first overall at the NHL draft in New Jersey. Which Avalanche rookie will be more impactful on the team, Nathan MacKinnon or head coach Patrick Waugh?
Patrick Waugh, because MacKinnon's still playing behind Duchesne and Stastny. You have Duchesne, O'Reilly, Parenteau, Tanguay, Landeskog, MacKinnon. Ton of offensive talent. Not going to be 24th overall in the power play this year. But the defense, some lack, you know, Sarich, Jan Heda, not great, great skaters there. Built like trucks, but not great skaters. Eric Johnson, does he think the game? Unless Semyon Varlamov has a season above and beyond what we think he's capable of, and maybe Patrick Waugh and Allaire can get that out of him, I just don't see this team having enough on the back end to be a playoff team.
Francois Allaire, the Avalanche goaltending
yes,
coach.
But if Varlamov has a year like Bobrovsky last year, this team has enough offensive firepower to make it.
I'm higher on the Avalanche than Richie is. I actually have them finishing third in this division. And again, their defense does, I agree with Richie, it leaves a little bit to be desired there. And, you know, Tyson Barrie looks like he'll match up with Heda on the top pairing. And then Eric Johnson is the second pairing. They've brought in Sarich. But they've, you know, Varlamov's been good in the preseason. Wasn't as good as he was last year from where he was with Washington. But, you know, down the middle, just so much talent there. This team's going to score a lot of goals. And I think with Patrick Waugh there, you asked Richie about, you know, what rookie would have a bigger impact. You know, Pat Waugh's coming back there. And I think he's going to have this team going so hard. And it's going to be wide open. And they're going to be a strictly, not strictly, but they're going to be, you know, a team that's going to attack you and be very, very difficult to defend because they're going to come at you with so much talent. So I think they're going to score a lot of goals and be better this year, and I think they're going to get back in the playoffs.
When we come back, we preview the Pacific Division, we give our Western Conference playoff teams, and we give our Stanley Cup champions. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our Illegal Curve season preview spectacular on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. We wrap up by focusing on the Pacific Division. Richie, I'm going to start with you. The Anaheim Ducks, they trade away Bobby Ryan. They bring in, you know, Jacob Silverberg, Stefan Nosin. They bring in Dustin Penner, ex of the Los Angeles Kings. Will the Ducks' trade of Bobby Ryan cost them a playoff spot for this season? How nervous are you about the Ducks' back end?
I'm worried about the back end, although there's some young talent there, Drew, and Eric DeHatrick mentioned Fowler, two good netminders. I just worry about the scoring. Getzlaff and Perry. And then, you know, Solani's older, Koivu's older, you know, they like Bonino and Silverberg, but that's a lot of pressure on those guys. Cogliano doesn't have good hands. I don't think Anaheim scores enough. I don't have them making the playoffs.
Ezra, the Vancouver Canucks, pretty much the same team as last year, with the exception of some depth players, nobody that's really impactful. They trade away Corey Schneider, Roberto Luongo's the number one goalie. Alain Vigneault gets his walking papers. John Tortorella comes back in. Is the Canucks' window as a serious cup contender closed?
I think so. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to win this division, but I think they'll be a playoff team. And you mentioned some of the pickups. Santorelli and Weber will be a bottom-pairing defenseman for them, but they've still got a lot of talent up front, and Henrik Sedin and Kessler are still one of the best 1-2 punches. So they're going to score their goals. It looks like due to injuries, both Bo Horvat and Hunter Shinkarak might actually stick around for a little bit. They might go back to junior because they can't go to the AHL. But there's going to be a lot of youth there, which I think is going to galvanize them a bit. There's going to be more of attention to defense under Tortorella. I think they're going to be a pretty good team still.
Richard, the Los Angeles Kings, they got Matt Fratton and Ben Scrivens from the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Jonathan Bernier trade. They bring in Jeff Schultz. They bring in Daniel Carcillo. They lose Rob Scuderi in free agency. How much will the Kings miss Rob Scuderi on the back end?
I miss him. They hope that, you know, a guy like Willie Mitchell can make up a left-handed veteran, steady, stay-at-home defenseman. Obviously missed all of last year. Jonathan Quick, Voinov and Doughty are incredible. Just such talented players. A ton of right-handed shots up front. A bunch of guys maybe playing out of position. Fratton is a guy, you know, I don't love him. He's got a great wrist shot, and they didn't have any scoring. But they had a problem with their secondary scoring in the playoffs. I like his addition. I'd like to see maybe a little bit more speed on that roster before the end of the season. But they're definitely a playoff team.
Ezra Ginsberg, the San Jose Sharks, again, stood very pat last year. The only real addition they made is bringing in Tyler Kennedy, ex of the Pittsburgh Penguins. You know, much like the Washington Capitals in the East, is this a team just destined to sort of replicate what they've done the last couple of years?
They're such a solid team, and they had trouble scoring goals last year, but they moved Brent Burns to wing, and it looks like he'll stay there on the top line with Joe Thornton. But up the middle, the most important position in hockey, Joe Thornton, Logan Couture, and Joe Pavelski, just so strong, and Niemi's given them really good goaltending. He was a Vezina finalist, and they've got a good group of defensemen there with Boyle, Vlasic, Brad Stewart, and Demers and others. And I've no reason to believe why they won't be a playoff team again. But as far as a Stanley Cup contender, probably not. But they're so well coached. Their special teams are so good. I can't not pick them to be in the big show again.
Richard, the Phoenix Coyotes bring in Mike Ribeiro, almost as importantly as they bring in ownership stability. Mm-hmm. The guys they lose aren't really of much impact whatsoever. Do they have enough forward depth to score consistently?
Probably not to score consistently, but do they need to make the playoffs? Probably not, is the answer to that. Power play was 25th last year. Ribeiro will make that better, I can assure you. Ekman-Larsson's a stud on the back end. They have some nice puck movers there. Schlemko, Yandel, Ekman-Larsson can all move the puck, complemented by a guy like Mihailuk. And Mike Smith, they're hoping for a bounce back year with an Olympic year. So I like this Phoenix team this year.
Ezzy, the Edmonton Oilers bring in a new head coach in Dallas Eakins. They get Andrew Ferentz in free agency. They get David Perron from the St. Louis Blues. A bunch of other guys. They lose Sean Horkoff. They lose Magnus Pjärvi. How significant are the injuries to Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Sam Gagner for the Oilers' hopes to make the playoffs for the first time in about 50 years?
Well, Gagner's got the broken jaw. Nugent-Hopkins has the shoulder issue. Mark Arcabella was starting as the second-line center for the Edmonton Oilers to start the season. And I mean, they're going to be back this year, but the question is how long, and that's going to affect them early on. They're a team that needs to get off to a good start. They're not good enough that they can get away with that. But, you know, bringing in Andrew Ferentz, I really like. He'll most likely be the top pairing there with Schultz. You know, Dubnyk's got to be better than he was last year. And, you know, the special teams were good last year, and they'll probably be good because Dallas Eakins is a fantastic coach. But, you know, those injuries are extremely significant early on, and you got to hope that guys like Ryan Smith and Alex Hemsky can pick up the slack along with, you know, you mentioned Perron was brought in. He's been good in the preseason. Mm-hmm. But those injuries are big to start the season. Hopefully they can recover from them.
Richard, the Calgary Flames are most people's pick to be the worst team in the NHL. If everything breaks the Flames' way all season long, mm-hmm. is this still the worst team in the league?
Yeah, 13th if everything breaks right.
13th in the West, you mean?
Well, yeah, if you want to go by West.
Sorry, yeah.
6 in their division.
Right.
So it's done. Let's go to predictions.
Okay, let's start with the playoff teams. Richie, give me your three playoff teams from the Central Division.
I have Chicago 1.
Chicago winning the division.
Yeah, Chicago winning the division, St. Louis 2nd, and Minnesota 3rd.
Okay. We'll get to your wild card teams next. Ezzy, give me your top three teams from the Central Division.
The top two are the same as Richie. I've got Chicago winning the division, St. Louis finishing 2nd, Colorado 3rd.
I have St. Louis winning the division, Chicago 2nd, and Minnesota 3rd. Richie, the Pacific Division, give me your top three teams out of the Pacific Division.
Regular season, I have San Jose 1, LA 2, and Vancouver 3.
Ezzy?
For the Pacific Division, LA 1, Vancouver 2, Anaheim 3.
And I have LA 1, San Jose 2, and Vancouver 3. Richie, give me your two wild card teams.
I'm very conflicted on this, Drew. I know we're up against it here. I keep saying, can the Jets be that team? Them and Dallas, I kind of have a coin flip. I think that division is weaker. But I think Phoenix is one wild card team. And I think Edmonton's the other wild card team.
So you have both wild card teams coming from the Pacific Division.
I do.
Ezra, give me your two wild card teams.
In the Pacific Division, it's the Sharks.
San Jose.
And in the Central, it's the Jets. I think the Jets are going to make the playoffs for the first time in Jets 2.0 history.
And in terms of my wild card teams, I have the Dallas Stars as one of the wild card teams, and I have the Phoenix Coyotes as the other wild card team. Richard, give me your conference champions.
The Boston Bruins in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And in the West, for whatever reason, I feel like San Jose makes it to the finals.
You have San Jose?
Yeah.
And who's your cup winner?
Boston. I think Iginla gets, like, that's a storyline for me. The Iginla Cup is a storyline for the year.
Ezzy, give me your team from the East.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh to win the East?
Yep.
Who's winning the West?
Chicago.
Chicago's winning the West. Who's winning the Cup?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's winning the Cup.
He called it last year, so I'll listen to him.
I'm going to say I think the LA Kings win the West. I think that the Detroit Red Wings win the East.
Yeah.
And I think that the Los Angeles Kings are your Stanley Cup champions this coming season. That's it for this Saturday afternoon and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show season preview spectacular. We hope you've enjoyed it. Big thank you to our guests, Shane Knighty, Eric Dehatchik of the Globe and Mail, Kevin Allen of USA Today. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available on the TSN 1290 website. It'll be available via download on iTunes, and it'll be available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, and the Linden Market Dental Center. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for producer Tim, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We remind you Wednesday night, season premiere of NHL Midweek from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Until then, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.